AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply. I'm Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here with our whole crew. We have our digital director, Mike Hogan.
Hey, Katie.
Our film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And our senior writer, Joanna Robinson.
Hi, Katie.
It is Oscar week, and lucky us, we are not starving ourselves or having multiple meetings with our stylists because we are not nominated for Oscars. We just get to talk about them. And this is the first of two episodes we'll have this week where we are predicting who's going to win, finally.
I should be starving myself. Can I use this as a plug?
Yeah.
For the live stream on the red carpet at the Oscar party with Kat Sadler, who actually knows what she's doing. Anyway, I'm going to be 10 pounds overweight because that's my condition in life.
Mike is still continuing his transition to on-air talent, which has long been his dream.
I think you just have to talk a lot about how you scarfed an In-N-Out burger on the way to the event, because that's usually what they say.
That's right. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. Onward.
I'm sure your skin looks flawless. So on this episode, we are going to do the first half of our predictions. We're going to start with some of the smaller categories. So then we'll move on to the acting categories and talk about Best Actor and Best Supporting Actress, as well as Best Director, just so, you know, you get some of the big ones. And then later this week, we will finish out the rest of them. And we're going to kick things off with the shorts, which we talked about in last week's episode, so hopefully you're all very familiar with them. Guys, we talked about the animated shorts and which one of them horrified us and Kobe Bryant and all of the rest. But what do you guys think is actually going to win? I'll start with Richard.
Well, I think that, you know, because it's been high on Gold Derby and people are dumb, let's just say it, I think Dear Basketball is going to win. And it's a big celebrity and, you know, there's kind of a novelty to that. I don't think it should. It was actually maybe my least favorite of the five. But yeah, that's what I'm going with. Does that mean you agree, Mike?
I mean, you're probably right, but I don't know. I put it last on my Gold Derby picks just to try to correct the record here.
Like your preferential ballot?
I am really pulling for Garden Party and hoping that maybe like a, you know, the reformed Academy that we have come to love in the last two years will not commit this error, but they probably will, I guess.
Yeah. I liked your theory, Mike, about Hollywood wanting to vote for itself and therefore voting for Garden Party because it was set in a Bel Air mansion. But I also went with the Gold Derby masses and picked Dear Basketball. I think because we talked about last week, there's a legendary animator from Disney who made it, and then also the John Williams score. It seems to kind of have the, like, everyone you know in Hollywood power behind it, which seems to win in some of these smaller categories. Joanna, how about you?
I'm going to stick with Garden Party as well. Because my attitude for these prediction episodes is like, I probably won't be right a lot of things, but I'm gonna vote my heart. So here we go. Get ready.
I think that is a wise.
Get ready for a lot of wrong answers.
We should publish the Joanna's Heart predictions palette.
That sounds like a Lifetime movie from the 90s.
Joanna's Heart.
Meredith Baxter Burney in Joanna's Heart.
That's actually going to be a documentary short next year.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
Well, Joanna, what is your heart telling you for the live action short film?
I'm going to go with All of Us, which, you know, we talked last week about it having the most complete arc of all the live action shorts we saw.
Yeah, I agree that it has a complete arc. I want to go in with DeKalb Elementary since, as we talked about last week, it's got like a lot of power behind it in kind of a small package. And I like, it's really hard to predict this category, especially a lot of weird ones win, but it seems just like artsy enough and fully realized to win.
Yeah, I'm torn between those two specifically, but I'm actually going to go with Joanna on this. I think that All of Us has, like she said, the arc and a political dimension. And a lot of times this is a category where a foreign film will win. So I think that could happen.
Yeah, that's true. And Mike?
I think that DeKalb Elementary, given the connection to the Parkland shooting now, will win. And will be a very worthy winner. But yes. I really liked All of Us as well. I think those are the two strongest.
There's some good ones in this category. Okay, the final short category, the documentary. Mike, you go first. What are you going with?
I am, you know what? I'm torn on this. I am going to go with the crowd here and say Edith and Eddie. But I do think that Joanna's point last episode is true, that if people start to look into it a little bit, they may feel slightly manipulated by this film just because it's not necessarily showing every side of the issue, but on the other hand, I feel like it's probably on the right side of the issue, and it's certainly very moving. And I think emotionally moving is ultimately going to be more effective than, you know, scrupulously even-handed. So I think Edith and Eddie, that's my pick.
Joanna, how about you?
Joanna's heart votes for Heroine, which I think we all agreed was the one we liked the best. I think it's not the sentimental favorite, but it's got my heart.
I went with my heart on that one, too. And I feel like because it's a Netflix movie, it's really accessible. And Netflix won last year, so that might give it some kind of boost. Going on, I guess. Richard, and you?
I'm just
going
to make a wild prediction and say that because the Academy is very navel-gazy and the term 405 Los Angeles freeway is in there, that they're just going to vote for Heaven as a traffic jam on the 405.
They're like, I, too, have been in a traffic jam on the 405.
Right, exactly.
I make art.
But truthfully, yeah, it is also about a creative person's struggles over personal obstacles, which probably a lot of Academy members can relate to. So I think that could...
And maybe some Academy members went to that show. It was in Los Angeles, the gallery show. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, you guys are shaking my sort of cynical confidence here, which is good.
Yeah, I think, you know, less cynicism. This is the time to, like Joanna said, go with your heart.
Mike's heart is going to be a documentary short in 2 years. It's going to be 30 seconds long and just a blank screen.
Okay, so let's get into the feature film. So we're going to start with the visual effects category, which I think is always kind of interesting because it's got a really strange mix of movies every year. You get a lot of blockbusters in here. So we've got Blade Runner 2049, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Kong, Skull Island, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and War for the Planet of the Apes, none of which are Best Picture nominees. So does anyone feel like they have an inside track on what's actually going to win here?
Apes is tearing up Gold Derby, right? Like, that's what everyone thinks is going to win.
I think it will win. And the reason is that it hasn't won the other two times, but was very much favored. And people in that world just believe that the VFX on it are miles ahead of pretty much anything else, including the previous ones, which probably should have won. And so there's the kind of Andy Serkis, like, well done, thank you for the trilogy aspect going on here as well. I think it's probably going to win.
Andy Serkis, you were really good at Black Panther. Here's an Oscar for your other film.
And the effects in Apes are really amazing. I mean, they really are crazy. Like, they're such a centerpiece of the film. Whereas I feel like for the other four, yes, special effects are in probably every shot, but they're not the focus in the same way that they are in Apes. So I feel like, you know, the technicians and the craftsmen in that branch of the Academy for sure will vote for it. And then I think maybe others will follow suit. So yeah, I'm gonna pick that too.
Joanna's heart is going with Blade Runner 2049. Because like, both because of my heart, and I haven't seen Apes yet, and also because I think it's possible that Blade Runner, like, gets a few of these, gosh, that film looked really good, Oscars, which we'll talk about another one soon.
Well, it's true. It has 5 nominations, right? So it, by that logic, it makes sense for it to win, if you know, but it does seem like maybe a special case this year with the end of a trilogy.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about Blade Runner 2049 later in the other categories it's nominated in. So I feel like it's nominated enough other places that maybe they can finally go with War for the Planet of the Apes. And also the other major Andy Serkis trilogy, Lord of the Rings movies, it finally won Best Picture on its third go round. So why not let that be your precedent, for lack of anything else? Next one is film editing, which is also an interesting technical category because I think, as we talked about a lot of times, there is this track record for a long time where you couldn't win Best Picture without being nominated for the Best Editing Oscar. And I believe Birdman was the one that broke that streak because Birdman looked like it was one complete shot. So there's some Best Picture nominees, some not. We have Baby Driver, Dunkirk, I, Tonya, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I think my main question is, if 3 Billboards wins editing, will we all flip over a table?
Yeah.
I'll put up 3 billboards outside the Dolby Theater. Yeah. How could Dunkirk not win this? I mean, it's all editing, that movie. I mean, all movies are all editing, but like that one in particular.
I feel like if we're going with Daniel Joyo's theory that Dunkirk is a stealth favorite, like this would be something to watch early in the night. Like if Dunkirk wins, if Dunkirk doesn't win, it feels like maybe it's not going to do that Best Picture run, but if it seems like it should, I'm kind of betting on Baby Driver as a surprise here. It keeps kind of popping up in technical categories and it does have pretty showy editing like Dunkirk. I'm not really doing that off of anything but a hunch, but it feels like it could happen.
Well, and it won the BAFTA, right? I mean, it has shown that it has strength. And by the way, you know, winning the BAFTA over Dunkirk in the UK is something.
Well, it's Edgar Wright versus Chris Nolan, like two favored sons of the UK. But I do think, like, we talked about this before in terms of like campaigning. I see Edgar Wright at every single event and I see Chris Nolan at every single event too, but like sort of a little bit more, begrudgingly, not like he doesn't want to be there, but like, and I say as if I were in the room, but like, you know, it's like Chris Nolan is doing this. He's like pleased to be there, where Edgar Wright's like, I really want this. That's my sense of those two people.
I mean, it's exciting the Baby Driver got nominated at all. It was a hit, but, you know, not like something so gigantic. So I like seeing it there.
Do you think the Kevin Spacey factor affects it at all?
I mean, kind of. Yeah, I do.
A little bit. A little bit of a taint.
I kind of forget he's in it. So wait, Mike and Joanna, what are your final picks?
I think Dunkirk.
I am also picking Dunkirk. And I just want to go back in time really quickly and say Three Billboards Outside the Dolby Theater is something that Jimmy Kimmel should consider for an Oscar bit.
I feel like if there's not an Oscar bit of Three Billboards somewhere, that Jimmy Kimmel should be fired.
Well, it failed. Yeah.
Okay. So I said we talk about Blade Runner 2049 again. It's here in production design. It's up against Beauty and the Beast, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, and The Shape of Water. I was surprised by how much Gold Derby consensus there was for Shape of Water here. Is that just because it got the most nominations and we figure for lack of another big contender, they'll just automatically go for it?
I put The Shape of Water because, like, as you know, I wasn't hugely fond of that film, but I think it was, I mean, maybe unless I don't understand what the production design category is rewarding, but like, I do think it could earn a production design Oscar. What do you think?
Isn't production design what's driving all of the excitement around The Shape of Water, ultimately? I mean, it's basically like a beautiful love story and absolutely meticulously, gorgeously designed in every aspect.
Yeah.
That whole thing where people are like, this is a fairy tale. The only reason they think it's like a fairy tale is because they took this sort of dreary science lab and like via production design made it look magical. I mean, I agree with that, even though the film itself didn't land with me.
Or even think of The Apartments, you know, the opening sequence where the apartment is flooded with water and then you get Sally Hawkins and Richard Jenkins and the movie theater below it, which I know is a real Toronto movie theater. I think you're dead on, Joanna, that it's the fairy tale enveloping quality of the movie is because of that. So are we all unanimous on this? The first
well,
one?
Well, also the production designer, Paul Osterberry, you know, was obviously famously in 2010 robbed for doing the production design of the Twilight Saga Eclipse. So I feel like this is long overdue.
All right. That's our first. Everyone agrees what's going to win. Let's see if we can do it again on cinematography. We have Blade Runner 2049 here again, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Mudbound, and The Shape of Water. And then I think the two notes that a lot of people know, Blade Runner 2049 is Roger Deakins, who has been nominated for, I believe, 14 Oscars now and never won. And then for Mudbound, you have Rachel Morrison, who's the first woman ever nominated in this category. So two opportunities to make history. I went with Roger Deakins. Where are you guys?
It's just going to be sick if they don't give it to Roger Deakins. Like, enough already.
We say that every time.
This time they have to do it.
I also put Deakins. I'm worried that it's going to go to the Shape of Water DP.
Oh.
But I would love for it to go to Deakins. I think, you know, he has both earned it in that film and in his long career. Rachel Morrison would be kind of a fun upset, and she does have momentum having shot Black Panther. So
They're all great looking films. I mean, I'm going to even say The Darkest Hour has wonderful cinematography.
Yeah.
All five of them are fabulous looking, but I don't know. It Blade Runner, you know, I just feel like he's got such a showpiece in that crazy Elvis casino scene that, and the fact that he recreates the original and updates it so much and kind of brings it to life in a new way. I think that's worth celebrating, and they do like to do a Lifetime thing eventually, usually.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, more than some of his other films. I mean, you know, it's this 2-hour, 40-minute just ode to his cinematography. I mean, the whole movie is just a showcase for that. And so I feel like because that movie, in a weird way, didn't like do that well at the box office and wasn't really beloved, but it still has all these nominations for its aesthetics, it means that people really like its aesthetics. Yeah. So I just think I think he'll win.
Yeah.
It is crazy to me that we're looking at Dunkirk here and being like, oh, 70 millimeter cameras in the air and in the ocean. That's fine. Like, that movie is so visually stunning, but it just kind of got edged out of the hype conversation.
We'll get to it.
How many people did see it in 70 millimeter? I mean, not to say that's, I don't know, you know, maybe everyone in the Academy.
You watched on your Apple Watch, right, Mike?
I did. Yeah. It's surprisingly good.
Okay. Costume design. You can watch it on the subway. Just feel the claustrophobia is right there with
Christopher
you.
Nolan just passed out somewhere at the suggestion.
Okay. Speaking of flipping tables, if anything other than Phantom Thread wins costume design, I'll be flipping a lot of tables stylishly, as stylishly as possible. So
yeah, so it's up against Beauty and the Beast, Darkest Hour, The Shape of Water, and Victoria and Abdul. And I think we said The Shape of Water won at the Costume Design Guild, which was crazy. I agree with you, Joanna, that Phantom Thread's going to kind of win out here. Richard and Mike, where are you guys?
Again, if people are counting the monster suit as a costume, which it, it yeah. is a costume. But no, I feel like Phantom Thread is the front runner for sure. And it's maybe the movie's best chance of winning for anything it's nominated for. So I'm going to go with that.
I have it down too, but I do think it might be caviar for the general here. You know, it may be that people are just like, but the monster suit. I don't know.
It's very shiny. I think if Phantom Thread hadn't gotten that Best Picture nomination, I might be more skeptical about it just being seen by people. But it does seem like people saw it and are paying attention to it. And I think if you see this movie, you can't not think about the costumes in it. So that would be nice. Guys, that's three categories of consensus in a row.
Whoa. I got to get my Maverick static.
We're getting
back.
Boring.
Well, I'm not sure this next one is where you want to do that. We're on makeup and hairstyling, where there's only three nominees. And I don't really know why there's only ever three nominees in makeup and hairstyling, but it's interesting. So we have Darkest Hour, Victoria and Abdul and Wonder. One of them is a Best Picture nominee with a whole lot of makeup in it. I just don't see how Darkest Hour doesn't win.
And a Best Actor lock for the person wearing the most makeup.
I have a question about this. I feel like I haven't done my homework when I say this, but I didn't see Victoria and Abdul. Do you know why it's nominated in this category?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did some stuff to Dench to make her a little more rotund.
Oh. Okay, so for padding, this is so weird.
Well, I think her face, too. I don't really know, because I don't really know. Because,
like, the Wonder and Darkest Hour, those are, like, really extreme sort of facial prosthetics. And last year, Suicide Squad won this category, I believe.
Well, I think to make Judi Dench look like a 12-year-old Indian child is very impressive.
You're right. I was blown away. Good call.
Politically dubious, but yeah.
All right. Yeah. Obviously, it's Darkest Hour. Obviously.
I will say again, I'm the one who saw Wonder, I think. That movie's delightful. Makeup's good. Go see Wonder if you want to just feel better about people, which is not what you can say for a lot of these numbers.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, every day. Then, grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
All right, guys, we're moving into the acting categories, which we have been talking about a lot for many months now. And there's a sense that a lot of these are really locked in after the BAFTA wins and kind of a series of wins for all of these people. But Joanna, I hear you're going rogue in supporting actress.
I am. I'm going to revert to, you know, our feelings of before and say Laurie Metcalf. I'm voting my heart. I don't know. I think it might be more, I mean, like, we all feel like we know who's going to win. So it might be more suspenseful and rewarding for me to just vote for who I hope and then deal with a crushing disappointment with, like, alcohol or whatever. So.
I mean, I feel like this is, like, unless you're putting money on it, like, why not go with your heart?
Right. I mean, if you're filling out your Oscar ballot for, like, a betting pool and you want to win, go with Janny. But like, if you want to vote with your heart, look into your heart. You know it's Laurie Metcalf. So there you go.
And Katie, Joanna's in for 20 large on this thing. Like she's this is serious for her.
Or for Bitcoin, right. The larger of the rest.
You're spending the Oscars in Vegas, Joanna. Richard, can you make the case for like why it is that Alison Janney seems to have walked away with this whole thing? Even though I know you're not a fan of the performance, I feel like it's a, like we've just seen the breadcrumbs.
Yeah, people love her. She has 7 Emmys. Like, she's just beloved in the industry. And Laurie Metcalf has too, but like, she doesn't work as consistently as Janney does. And so Janney's just around. She knows everybody, I think. And I think at this point also, not to like imagine the psychology of an Academy voter, although that's what kind of what we do all the time. Like, at this point, she's won so many other awards. They've seen her on so many other stages that they're like, oh, yeah, her. She's winning, right? So they just kind of go with it, you know. Or I guess the other thing could be people assume she's going to win. And so they vote for they vote like Joanna with their heart. And then that kind of changes things. But I think there's pretty much no way Jandy doesn't win this.
It's just a more accessible, not accessible. It's like a bright, shining object of a performance. Yeah. Whereas Laurie Metcalf's is very subtle. I think Laurie Metcalf's is more recognizably human. And Allison Janney's is more of a kind of a caricature, but it's quite a sort of great jumps off the screen caricature, you know, whereas Laurie Metcalf is playing like a very difficult, complex person and she's believable, but it's not that kind of like, wow, did you see Laurie Metcalf and Lady Bird? You know, I feel like that's kind of what happened with these two performances.
I've heard this reaction that people think the mother character in Lady Bird is not a believable character, which is not what you said, Mike, but like, and that, I mean, I don't want to get too personal on this Oscar predictions podcast, but like, given my relationship with my own mother, like that was a very familiar human to me and to a lot of people, but there's also this other side, you know, the other half of this world that has never encountered a woman quite like that who expresses her love in these very like difficult ways. And so I have heard from some very smart people that they're like, I just didn't get it.
Can I just maybe try one more thought on this?
Yeah.
It's so intense. It's sort of it's unsettling and disturbing in a way that doesn't necessarily make you want to celebrate what Laurie Metcalf does, which is very honestly, realistically portray like a very complex, ultimately problematic mom. And the version that Allison Janney does is sitcom-y enough that you're kind of like, okay, I mean, that's a crazy character, but at least it wasn't like disturbing the essence of my core. You know,
right.
and therefore it's a little easier to celebrate. I don't know. That's a thought.
Yeah. And
when colorful villains win, like in the men's supporting category, colorful villains win all the time and they're rarer for women, but it's the kind of thing that's like kind of the definition of a scene stealing performance.
That's such a more succinct way of putting everything I was trying to
say. No, I think you're getting into psychology well though, Mike.
No, I think Mike makes a really good point in terms of like disturbing. Like, I don't know. I find what Laurie Metcalf does in Lady Bird so, like, I think disturbing is the right word, but not quite for the same reason that Mike says. It's like, it's so familiar to me that it's unsettling to me that someone else has met this woman. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, how did you get in my head?
That's the unsettling part to me is I was like, oh, I thought this was a unique experience. And I've, you know, a lot of people go to Lady Bird. They're like, oh, how did Greta Gerwig sort of translate my life into her film? But, that's
Joanna.
Go ahead.
I'm going to stop you there because as your producer, you're spoiling the plot of Joanna's heart, and I don't.
Fair enough.
We're never going to win that Oscar.
Cut this out. All right.
Okay, let's go on then to Best Actor, which we have also debated for a long time. There was a genuine surprise in this category, I think, when Denzel Washington got nominated, but I don't think anyone thinks he's going to win. And as we've said a couple times, it kind of felt like Gary Oldman might lose this at some point, but he has been the front runner since Telluride, and it's all signs point to him winning, right? Are you going with your heart?
I am. I'm voting. I'm Team Timothy. So there you go.
I mean, it's not impossible. Like, I don't.
Joanna, they're going to break your legs when they have to collect their money. Yeah, I would love Timothy to win. And you're right, Katie, that there was a weird moment kind of like, I don't know, like around the new year where like it felt like maybe the wind was changing, but it
around the time that James Franco, I think, fell out of the race because of allegations against him.
Yeah, and now it's clearly not. So I think it's pretty much a done deal.
And look, at the risk of... I mean, there's some personal history stuff with Gary Oldman that is disturbing and not great. But if it's possible to set that aside, and I don't know that it really is, but this is probably similar to Roger Deakins, a career award.
Sure.
And it's not just for this quite phenomenal performance, but it's also for Sid and Nancy, and it's for Bram Stoker's Dracula, and it's for True Romance, and it's for Basquiat, and it's for a lot of really, really incredible performances. This is a guy who has had a hell of a career. The Dark Knight, you know, he's a phenomenal actor, whatever else he may be. And so, I think that's what's coming into play here. And Timothy Chalamet is going to have presumably more chances.
He's a 12 years old. Yep. You know, and this is only Gary Oldman's second nomination, which is crazy. Yeah. So like, yeah. yeah, I think that you're right in terms of a career defining thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like low on the list of concerns in Hollywood right now. But I always worry when someone gets something like a career win that it feels like it's kind of for a lesser performance. And that happens a lot of times, too. Like you see like Kate Winslet winning for The Reader. No one thinks that's one of her greats. But I do think he is really good in Darkest Hour. And the fact that it got a best picture nomination, like there's a power to that movie. And, you know, it's OK if he's not like the most exciting win for anybody. But I feel good about that performance being rewarded as a performance, and then you can get into what he may or may not have done in his personal life.
He's really good, and he's way out of type, too, I think. By the way, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, another one. I mean, and that's there is no real type for him, but they often menacing, and there's something menacing about his Churchill, but ultimately he's like the hero who saved us all from the Nazis.
Right.
So,
yeah. And the clips that you see from this are like him bellowing, like you cannot negotiate with a tiger when your head is in its mouth. But there's these great quiet moments in the movie. Like he gets on the phone with Franklin Roosevelt and kind of begs him for help. And you see this like doubt creeping into his face, and it's very quiet. And there's so much range in the performance there. That's really hard to get the sense of when you're just seeing kind of TV ads for it.
And politically, oddly, I think, I mean, not that there are that many conservatives in the academy, but conservatives and liberals can sort of put their vote in, like, if only we had a Churchill, you know, now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think everyone's yearning for this kind of leadership, as scary as it is when you see what it really may have amounted to in real life, how surrounded he was. We look at it back. I mean, that's what I do really like about the film. We look back at this as like, oh, this monolithic moment in time where everything was inevitable, and it was far from inevitable, and he was far from a perfect vessel for anything. So I think that for all those reasons, I mean, I think I'm not going to be sorry to see this win.
I also do think that there are, like, if Timothée Chalamet were to win, like, given how young he is, I feel like that could be a really difficult thing for him to navigate in his career. Like, we've seen what happened a lot. It happens more with women, that you win an Oscar really young, and then it's hard for you to kind of match that. So I feel like even he should maybe be glad to be nominated and not win, just to give himself a little bit more room to breathe than the rest of his career. All right. So let's wrap up this first half of our Oscar predictions by talking about Best Director, which is another category that we felt like was wide open for a long time. And then it seems like Guillermo del Toro has really run away with it. Is this all Shape of Water love? Is it all Guillermo love? Like, who wants to make the case for why Guillermo del Toro seems to have this locked up for us?
Because he's somebody who is respected in the industry, even if he kind of delivers a turkey here, you know, here and there, and, you know, doesn't follow through on big projects that he, you know, talks about in interviews and stuff like that. I think that there is a lot of love for Del Toro, and finally there is a movie that he's made that is broadly accessible to a wide range of people. You know, Pan's Labyrinth, unfortunately, it's not in English, so like it didn't, you know, it couldn't connect to as many people in the Academy as it needed to, or whatever.
And deeply disturbing,
and too deeply disturbing. And Shape of Water is, while actually pretty violent, much more violent than the sort of like fairy tale aspect, you know, gets spoken about. It, you know, it has a sweet ending, and it's a warm movie. And so I think people who have been itching to give him something, to give him that recognition, will do it here.
Yeah, one of the things when we had Rebecca on last week to talk about her piece about the 98 Oscars, an anecdote that stuck out to me is that James Cameron had gotten in a fight with Harvey Weinstein during a commercial break at the Oscars to defend Guillermo del Toro, who at the time had made Mimic for the Weinstein Company and was treated pretty badly. And that said a lot to me about not just that he's beloved now, but he's been in this industry for a long time and making films and working with a lot of people. And we've seen that power in a lot of different Oscar categories over the year, where people want to work with the person who they like, or want to vote for the person who they like. And then when it happens to be a beloved movie like Shape of Water too, it really works out.
I think it's a career award for basically Pacific Rim. My personal
Pacific
view.
Rim 2 is coming soon.
Yeah.
Well, I once saw Guillermo and Ryan Gosling in conversation at South By, and the way in which Ryan Gosling just like revered Guillermo, and the way in which you talk, you know, like Guillermo has this super weird mansion that he lives in that has like waterfalls in it and all this sort of stuff like that. And he's one of those directors that just like, all directors love movies, but he like loves movies of every kind. And I think it is just one of those things where other people in the industry look at him and say, like, this is someone who just like is in it for the right reasons, is in it for the passion, is not in it for like the glitz and the glamour and the fame. And also Guillermo's story of like how Shape of Water came about was because he like got drunk at a post-Oscars party and approached Sally Hawkins and was like, gonna make a movie for you. I mean, that is like charming in and above, like, you know, the ways in which the actual movie didn't work for me. So.
Well, and also if you're a creative person, which just about everybody in the Academy is, the holistic vision that he brings and his ability to bring that to every aspect of the film is obviously going to be inspiring and sort of I think awe inspiring. Yeah. Really, that it's so clearly like his thing.
Would any of us dare pick a spoiler? Like, does it seem possible for someone else to sneak in here?
I mean, I guess Nolan, but like, there's just something about Nolan that like. The Academy just seems really cool on, you know, maybe it's because he's kind of a cool person, but or seems so anyway. But I guess that would be the only other option, right? I mean, I would love it if Jordan Peele were seriously in the race, but I don't know that he is.
Yeah, I feel like with Jordan Peele, it's kind of similar to Timothée Chalamet. Like you want to like getting the nomination is an enormous accomplishment for your first feature, and winning kind of puts a target on your back that I don't think anyone would want. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but it does seem like the nomination is a gigantic reward in itself.
I kind of think if anyone wins it, it could be Jordan Peele, because I think that the crowd that's voting for Guillermo would be the similar crowd to the one that's going to vote for Christopher Nolan. But I don't know. That's maybe a little spoiler of my one interesting pick in this whole thing, which is Best Picture at this point.
Speaking of which, we'll get to Best Picture in this week's second episode, which you'll be able to find in your feed on Thursday. So we'll be back with that. In the meantime, you can find us all at VanityFair.com, where our Oscar predictions will all be online. You can see the official Vanity Fair line on what you should actually put your 20 grand bet on in Vegas to be like Joanna Robinson. Please keep tweeting at us at Little Gold Men. We love hearing from you, and we're all on our own. I'm at Katie Rich. Mike?
Mike_Hogan.
And Richard?
Rye Laws.
And Joanna?
Joe wrote this.
This episode was edited and produced by Danielle Roth. And this week's award for the best start to a 2019 Oscar campaign goes to...
Joanna's heart. My heart.
Joanna's heart.
It's got my heart.
My heart. I'm voting my heart.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, J. Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.